fight for Caesar. And welcome to the Movie Ladder Podcast. We're climbing the rungs of cinematic connections. Each week, we're discussing a movie that connects to the movie from the previous week's podcast. Last week, we discussed X-Men. And this week, due to a difference in leadership styles connection, we are rejoined by Kevin Mahadeo. And he's back once again. Prophecy fulfilled.
Hello. I'm actually the real connection between the two movies last week and this week. It's me.
Your suggestion, yes. The rare guest gets their movie picked, and guest gets the movie picked and comes back as the guest.
I know. How many times does this happen? What connections to older episodes is this?
LaTanya, I believe, earlier this year.
Yes, that was the Barbie Poor Things.
I believe Barbie was her suggestion off of Poor Things, or Poor Things was her suggestion off Barbie. I don't remember which order
we did both. Yeah. And then it's happened with Megan the Librarian with Scorsese, yeah. Maybe.
Mm-hmm. We have had guest suggestions picked. Yeah. But I
meant the guest pick and then the guest also returned.
Yeah, I think LaTanya's the only time that happened.
Okay, cool.
Poor Things and then Barbie. And I can't even tell you for sure that Barbie was her suggestion, or it might have been my suggestion, to be honest.
I can't say for sure right now.
On top of that, the prophecy has been fulfilled. So I did mention this last week, and I will just recap for anybody who missed it or forgot. Mm-hmm. About 2 years ago, I think it was in December of 2022, I woke up and I G-chatted Brendan and said, I had this crazy dream that we did War for the Planet of the Apes, and our guest was Kevin Mahadeo, and I had forgotten to watch the movie. And so it was like going to school and you have a test and you haven't done your studying and haven't done your homework.
Well, too bad we're not doing War for the Planet of the Apes. I hope you watched the right movie, Zach.
I did not watch War for the Planet of the Apes, so I guess that we have that. Yeah.
I mean, it's like you had a prophecy, and this was your chance to change history, and you did it. You fixed the timeline. You now
we
can
did
leap
the correct movie.
Into the
one
next.
That I
The Nexus point was the X-Men podcast.
Yeah, there we go. Good, very good point. Yes, and also. Here, you've heard him already talking. Joining me for the 227th time.
Brenda Fitzpatrick.
Yeah, that's you.
I'm here. Yeah, that's me. It's still me. I'm still here. Well.
All discombobulated on the intro. So we're going to be talking about Dawn of the Planet of the Apes. I don't know about you guys. I watched Rise also to refresh my memory. Did not watch War. I'm planning to watch that maybe tonight, maybe tomorrow. But trilogy done.
I did watch the trailer for War for the Planet of the Apes as soon as I finished the movie last night. And I had kind of forgotten that Woody Harrelson was the general in that.
Yeah, or the colonel. I think it's the colonel.
Well, here's the thing is, whenever I think about that movie, I mix up his character and the Matthew McConaughey character from Rate of Fire. Because they're basically the same military comes riding in crazy, like, evil dude. And so I, like, for some reason, always think that War is Matthew McConaughey, and it's not. It's Woody Harrelson.
I mean, it's funny because those two are so connected on so many levels, right? Like, they have similar vibes, True Detectives. Like, they just are very similar.
They might actually be brothers, according to Matthew McConaughey's mom.
Like, oh, that's crazy.
Oh, wow.
I mean, I believe it. I love that conspiracy theory.
That's fun. I feel like also, you know, the confusion also with, like, which is the first movie, which is the second movie, which is, I guess, you know, this is technically what, the eighth movie in the series, but not in this canon. This is only the second movie in this canon. So this is the second one of the trilogy, although, as Brennan can probably tell you, it does kind of stand alone on its own. So we'll talk all about it. And then at the end of the episode, we'll decide on our next movie based on suggestions sent in by you, the listeners, and us, your hosts. Kevin might be able to have a first time ever and have a guest have their pick chosen twice in a row.
That would be iconic. I've got some good ones. I don't know if we'll see. We'll see. I got some good ones in here, I think.
I'm curious to see if we end up having crossover. I think there's some, like, obvious crossovers.
Like at least two of them might be.
Oh, for sure. And this, I mean, things that listeners are and such. Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. So we will do all that. Kevin, if your choice is picked, there's no obligation that you have to join us for a third week unless you really want to.
I do actually have, my mom is in town next week, so that is not going to be able to.
Awesome. All right. Kevin is off the board. Cool. All right. Well, before we get into Dawn of the Planet of the Apes, we skipped this kind of last week, but we'll do it this week. We like to do the best thing you watched since the last time you were on. So Kevin, you only get a week to choose from. Is there anything good that you've watched in the last week?
I mean, does this count? No, other than this. I know. Other than this, I'm trying to think of like what I actually watched this past week. It's been a wild, wild week. I mean, obviously, I've been watching X-Men 97 week by week. I believe, yeah, actually, episode several came out. An episode came out, and I actually think that might be my pick for real, because they did the big thing in that episode, which for me is the dropping of the line, Magneto was right. Huge moment in the series. I really, really loved it. It had epic action scenes. Wolverine got his like moment. People were complaining about that. Wolverine got to really kick some ass. It was really, really, really well done episode with a just hype of an ending. It's the first part of the three-part finale, Tolerance is Extinction, and it really went off with a bang, and I cannot wait to see how they land this plane in the next two episodes.
Yeah, I can't wait to wake up tomorrow morning and watch episode 8, the penultimate episode, and see what they do, because episode 7 was so action-packed and epic and exciting. You know, the Don't Mess With the Summers family, like, really got me. I was like, yeah! All right, Kevin, fine. I see what Kevin means. Cyclops is cool. He's sometimes. He's great.
Yeah. Now, Kevin, did you see... So, I keep wanting to call him Bo Willimon, but it's Bo DeMeo. He has been posting his, like, assignment reading materials, homework. So he posted two things. One is a comic that I did not get a chance to read. It is Fatal Attractions. I did read the Wikipedia of what happens in it, and there's also a TikTok that I saw that somebody posted.
Huge stuff. I mean, the Fatal Attraction storyline is legendary in the X-Men canon. I mean, you know, this is spoilers for that, so it's not guaranteed that this is what happens in the show, but boy, oh boy. Fatal Attractions is known for two big things, I think. At least two big things. One, Magneto ripping the adamantium out of Wolverine, which I think we talked about last week. A hell of a moment.
Yeah.
And then also Xavier doing some drastic measures against Magneto and essentially erasing his mind, which is crazy. But that also plants the seed for a huge crossover many, many, many moons later called Onslaught, which is huge and was a big moment in comics. That involved the entirety of the Marvel universe at the time. So like, exciting. It's a big one. Fatal Attractions.
Nice. He also posted the Pride of the X-Men pilot episode, which I did watch
that again. Yes.
Wolverine's voice in that is hilarious. I laughed so hard when he talks with this, like, I don't know if it's Australian accent or
it's Australian. Yeah.
Which is ironic since Hugh Jackman ended up not having his Australian.
Another prophecy fulfilled.
Yeah. True. Yeah. All right, cool. Brendan, how about you?
Yeah, I mean, if I'm being honest, the real best thing I watched was watching Empire Strikes Back on May 4th. But everybody knows how much I love Empire Strikes Back. It's a perfect movie. Actually, I'm going to drop a couple of Linklater films I watched on Friday. I'm catching up on some Richard Linklater blind spots for me in preparation for Hitman coming out in a couple weeks, his newest film with Glenn Powell. I watched A Scanner Darkly and Waking Life back to back.
Nice ladder.
That was a wild double feature because both movies are so surreal and existential and filled with this like existential dread of their main characters. Scanner Darkly, I would say that I preferred over Waking Life. Waking Life all sort of takes place in this weird dream reality where the lead character played by Wiley Wiggins is unsure if he's awake or dreaming throughout the entire film. And it's all animated in that sort of rotoscope animation style where it's very uncanny because there are a couple of shots where you're not sure if like it's live action or animation, but it's all animation. I really like it took some getting used to for my eyes to adjust to the rotoscoping in Waking Life. And I'm really glad I watched that one first because then it didn't bother me at all when they did the same tactic with the rotoscoping for Scanner Darkly, which is sort of the forgotten film in the Robert Downey Jr. comeback era of 2006 to 2008 before he gets cast as Iron Man. Everybody sort of always talks about Kiss Kiss Bang Bang as like his big comeback. But I thought he was fantastic in this. This came out in 2006, and it basically Keanu Reeves plays an undercover agent who is tracking Robert Downey Jr.'s drug dealer character, and Keanu Reeves' character starts to lose the reality of his undercover life and his real life, because like it's really cool. Like they have him in this like futuristic suit that basically changes whenever he walks into a room, and he can beat anybody at any time. Kind of like a Mystique type effect, like we were talking about last week with X-Men, where he can basically transform into anyone. And it's a really cool animation. So if people are unfamiliar with those two films, I highly recommend checking those out as preparation for Hitman coming out in a couple weeks.
Which is not rotoscoped.
Rotoscoped, but it would be kind of cool if it was. But I don't believe it is yet. Nice. But I don't know what Linklater's obsession with rotoscoping is, but I mean, he pulls it out again in 8.5, which we talked about that on this, Apollo 10.5, which we talked about on the pod last year, right?
Yep. So, yep.
Yeah. What about you, Zach? What's your...
So it's tough for me to choose. I did end up watching the whole X-Men trilogy. I think I'm going to end up watching all these X-Men movies before Deadpool and Wolverine comes out.
We'll see at the end of this podcast.
True. Yeah, I might be going back. Well, I did watch The Last Stand, and I hope that I am not having to suffer through The Last Stand again next week. I spoke highly of it last week, and really just swinging a miss on a lot of movie. No, but the best thing I watched, not a superhero movie, not even anybody who's played a superhero, I don't think, in this movie. That is Election from 99. So the Doughboys covered this movie on their Patreon feed today. And I saw they posted last night that they were going to do that. And I was like, oh, I've been wanting to rewatch Election. We have an election coming up. So I watched it. I had seen it, I think, back in 2019. And it's always funny when I watch something and I log it on Letterboxd, and then I look at my previous log on Letterboxd, and I said the exact same thing both times, which is... this movie is like real life politics mixed with Fargo, which is really how I feel about that. And it just ages every time you watch this movie. I feel like every election cycle that I've watched this movie, I'm like, oh yeah, there's this like thing I didn't pick up on, or like there's this parallel to real life. Just a whole bunch of terrible characters, and all about the election of like a school class president. So I'm sure people are familiar with Election. It's come up a bunch recently on this podcast, I think off Bulworth and some other movies. If you haven't watched it, this is the year to watch it, because we have a presidential election, so you might as well check it out.
Pick flick.
Yeah. Have you, Kevin, have you seen Election?
I have seen Election, but what just clicked in my brain is that I've been meaning to rewatch Election. My wife and I have talked about it several times, but then it just recurred to me there is something else I saw that I also want to not necessarily put up in contention, but it's up there because it was the first time I ever saw this movie. We are watching, my wife and I, for whatever reason, decided to watch Devil Wears Prada. I had never seen it. My wife has seen it many times. Loved it. It was great. A banger of a time. And because of that, we are also now rewatching several Annie Hatz films because I love her deeply. Like I said, my wife before, but Annie Hatz is really my wife. We did Princess Diaries last night. So nice. We're going to be going on like an Annie Hathaway journey, and I'm really excited about that.
There's that new one that just came out, too.
The Idea of You.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Devil Wears Prada, very well timed with the Met Gala just in your neck of the woods.
Absolutely.
Last night. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's a good one. I'm half tempted to have suggested it because I was like, the connection there is me. I'm the connection. There we go.
Well, if you do want to watch Election, it is on Max, also on Canopy, if you have Canopy through your library. So
we have Max, so that works out well.
There you go. Nice. All right, cool. Well, speaking of Max, Dawn of the Planet of the Apes was on Max, also on Hulu as well.
Very true.
Although my Max is, or the Max that I use, is ad-free. So I was watching on Max, so I didn't have to sit through ads. Rewatch for All of Us came out almost exactly 10 years ago. 2014. Was it summer of 2014 that this came out?
Summer 2014, yeah.
All right. So we're
2 weeks before Guardians of the Galaxy.
Mm-hmm. Yep. This is the sequel to Rise, although, you know, really kind of, I mean, I guess it's a, you know, you kind of would want to watch War After, but this is really like a standalone after Rise. So it's about apes took over at least a part of San Francisco. Unclear. Yeah, Muir Woods, right. Unclear how much more of the Earth they've taken over at this point, if it really is the planet, or if maybe this movie is the dawn of the Planet of the Apes. Kevin, you suggested this. Why don't you talk about why you suggested this movie?
Well, I do feel like, one, this trilogy is kind of underrated. It is a sleeper hit of a trilogy that I honestly put up there with some of the big ones for me, right? Like, I loved these movies, and it shocked me how much I was going to enjoy them. And honestly, it even started with Rise. We talked about, you know, Zach, you rewatched Rise. Brandon, I don't know if you did, but, like, it also was very good in a way that I was stupefied by how good that movie was. I expected it to be, like, this just, like, dumb film, right? Mm-hmm. But there's the one moment for me. I thought it was so clever, one, how they really put it in Caesar's POV, how they showed his journey, how, you know, he's getting smarter, of course, but then put into a oppressive situation, I thought was really smart. But then the moment that I still get chills, even rewatching it, I still got chills, is, of course, when Draco Malfoy, you know, goes to hit him and he says, like, get your hands off me, you damn dirty ape. And it's like a funny moment. But then when the Caesar just says for the first time, no, it's such a, like, I can feel my goosebumps right now. It's so good and it's so executed. And my brain knew these monkeys talk, but that was somehow shocking for me. Like, when it happened, I just didn't expect it. And I love the idea of also the first word of this world being no to someone trying to abuse and oppress them. I thought was brilliant and really sets the tone leading to this, leading to Dawn, right? Which really took the franchise, I think, to the next level. Rise was good. Once you hit Dawn, Dawn's great. Like, Dawn and War are phenomenal films, but it gets there because of Rise, in my opinion. And I had to pick Dawn because of that absolutely genius connection to how I saw it at the time, where I was just like, oh, they just turned it into Magneto and Xavier. That's clever. So I really enjoyed that aspect of it.
I will say Dawn is a big step up from Rise. Having watched both, I remembered Rise being really good and really liking it. And I do think, like, there's some good aspects of Rise, and it's good as, like, a companion piece to this, but it's more just kind of like setting the table for what happens in this. And because even Dawn is like, we're, you know, the apes have, it's 10 years later, the apes have kind of taken over, but, like, they haven't fully taken, it's not the Planet of the Apes yet. And I think in the next movie, maybe we see more of the Planet of the Apes. Definitely from the trailers, it seems like in Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes, it really is the planet has been totally occupied. But, you know, Brendan, you just talked about Empire Strikes Back. And, like, this movie is not Empire Strikes Back, but I do think that this took the first movie and just elevated it to such a higher level. I was really impressed with watching Dawn after watching Rise.
It certainly is the Empire Strikes Back from the human POV. I mean, things end on a real poor note for the humans. I mean, and also things aren't looking good for the apes. I mean, at the end of Dawn, the soldiers have been called, and the Empire is on its way to try to wipe out this, you know, covern of
the war is beginning.
The war is beginning. So it really does have that Empire Strikes Back kind of feeling to the end of it, where things are not looking great for either side. I really love this movie. I love it visually. I love the score.
Giacchino score, really good.
Really wonderful Giacchino score. I think what I really was not expecting and had kind of forgotten was how great the Jason Clarke performance is in this film. Because whenever I think of him, I think of his, like, turn as bad guys or douchebags. And I had like sort of forgotten. Yeah, like in Oppenheimer or, you know, I mean, a film that might come up, he's the, you know, John Connor, evil John Connor in Terminator Genesis.
Oh, that's right.
Like, so, I mean, he's generally not playing a good guy, and he's so good and so sympathetic in this. And I had sort of forgotten how well the bond, like, how hopeful the bond between humans and apes is throughout 75% of this film until Koba does what he does. Like, you're really, like, sitting there just enjoying this journey of humans and apes. Can they get along? Are they going to get along? You know it's going to go bad. You're waiting for it to go bad. But there's this, like, glimmer of hope as the relationship between, you know, the Kerry Russell character and the Jason Clark, I'm going to try to call him Jason Isaacs throughout the podcast, characters start to build this relationship with Caesar and his family, and it all goes to shit because of Toba and his trauma that he endured, which you also completely understand and empathize with. And that's where the Magneto versus Xavier comparisons come in, is that both want similar things, but one of them is going to go to more extremes to get the equality that they want, like, or the vengeance for the rights that have been wronged to them. Like, we see that every day with modern protests. It's the Malcolm X versus frickin' Martin Luther King thing from the 60s.
Yeah.
It's the same, you know, what is the right way to protest? What is the right way to fight for equal rights and equality? And what is the wrong way? And you get that debate going on today with protests that are happening right now in this country. Mm-hmm. Like, it's, and so it really, that aspect of it really, really hit home for me on this watch last night.
Nice. Yeah, no, I do think, like, the parallels between Professor X and Magneto. I mean, Kevin, I never would have thought to pick this movie last week, but I do think, like, I have some fun, like, title connections and ideas for connections off of this to last week. So I think that's good. What are some other reasons that you think, like, why this just in general works as a sequel? Is, like, well, you said this trilogy is one of the best, Kevin. Like, and I think that's getting, I think when this movie came out and when the trilogy came out, people weren't talking about that as much. But now with Kingdom coming out and these movies back kind of in the zeitgeist, I feel like there's a resurgence of people talking about why these movies are great.
Yeah, and I think the movies really did interesting things first off, right? Like I mentioned, like, telling the story from the perspective of Caesar, not doing, I think, also the obvious of even yet jumping to Planet of the Apes. Like, how do you take a IP like Planet of the Apes and do something new with it, right? Like, we saw when they tried to just do Planet of the Apes with the Burton movie, and that was a disaster. For your sakes, I did not write down Burton's Planet of the Apes as a suggestion. Someone might have. It was not me, because that movie is not
good. Can we pause here? It's like, okay, so I saw that movie, and I have never seen the original Planet of the Apes, and, you know, maybe I will next week. But, like, the Burton one, the ending doesn't make any sense, right?
No, it doesn't.
Like,
correct.
It's an ending to set up a sequel that never happened.
Never happened. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Because, like, I remember, like, spoilers for that Burton in Planet of the Apes, but, like, he lands back at the Lincoln Memorial, and it's, you know, it's supposed to be evocative of the original Planet of the Apes, but, like, the Lincoln Memorial is now an ape dressed as Abraham Lincoln.
Yeah.
It is a statue.
Doesn't make any sense.
Not only any ape, the bad guy ape that he was just fighting on a different planet. Like, that was the craziest thing. It's like, it doesn't even take place on Earth. It's a whole mess, but, like, that's the thing. A lot of people, I think, of our age group probably have not seen the original Planet of the Apes, but we all know the twist. It is so zeitgeisty that it became, how do you take this movie, who all of it is just a twist? The rest of Planet of the Apes is nothing. It's just the twist. The twist is it. That's the thing. But how do you then go, like, we're going to remake it? But, of course, the failure becomes, like, okay, well, everybody knows the twist. What do we do? So the Burton version, I mean, there's a lot of reasons why it didn't work, but the Burton version ends up failing because they tried to do a twist, a thing that would make you feel different, so you don't know the movie you're watching, and it just falls flat. This movie was smart in that we're just going to take it and we're going to do something different. It's not about the twist. It's going to be about the apes. How do we get to the planet? But how do we tell it in such a compelling, fascinating, interesting way and focus it on character and not the human characters, really? And I think that's so fascinating to me, is that it's not about the human characters. It's about the apes who end up taking over and showing their journey and focusing it on Caesar specifically through an incredible performance by Andy Serkis, which kind of brings me to the other thing about this. Like, the effects are incredible. Holy shit. Like, this is next level, like, CG and mocap. And, of course, like, you know, Andy Serkis and the company has, like, perfected this. Like, this is evidence of how far it's come. And I think the last thing I would say about, like, why I wanted to choose this and why I think it's so good comes then to the handoff from the original director to Matt Reeves. And Matt Reeves is excellent. An excellent, excellent director, to the point that, you know, he got Batman following this, and I was hyped because he was going to do Batman, because I saw what he did with these movies. So that's, and, you know, Ad mentioned the score because he works with Giacomo. Like, it's just so much goodness brought into these films, and I think the unexpectedness of it. That was the real twist. The real twist of the new trilogy is that these movies are good. Like, that's the big twist.
Yeah, and I think the, like, just to talk about the Rise real quick, is, like, it just does feel like you're, like, Rise is a good, like, above average movie, and it takes that step up where, like, both the subject matter, the plot, the effects look a lot better in this, although I do have, like, some qualms with some of the CGI. Like, the non-ape CGI, like, doesn't always look that great in this, I think, but I think that's also just 10 years ago technology, but that Rise up that we get right from the last movie to this one, like, it's very noticeable, where that first one is like a really nice appetizer and this is your meal, and maybe this and War together is your meal, really, and to be determined if Kingdom can continue that, although it's getting pretty good buzz. So I think, like, I see why Matt Reeves then got Batman. I think the action scenes in this too was something I wrote down. Like, there's some really awesome action, and, like, the politics and palace intrigue of Caesar versus Koba is, like, that we don't even really get that plot starting until halfway through the movie. Like, the movie shifts complete focus halfway through. And it's, you know, if you're going for the first time, you don't expect that. And I didn't remember if that happened in this movie or in War. So it was the assassination attempt is just like, or the assassination attempt is, like, really, really elevates this too.
And then the way, like, Koba is able to manipulate and indoctrinate Caesar's son Bright Eyes, like, reminded me a lot of Shogun, actually.
Yes.
And the way that the Yamashige character and his nephew manipulate the lead character's son, Torinaga's son in Shogun, to do, like, something really, really stupid on that show. Yeah. Like, it really reminded me of that same, like, the way the show executes that. Like,
I had that same feeling about this, where I was, because I'm rewatching Shogun right now, and so Shogun is kind of fresh on the brain, even though it just ended, and I was thinking a lot about, like, the politics of leadership, the different leadership styles, the sacrifices you make to be a leader, all like really resonant in this movie too,
for sure.
Another thing I really like about this is that, like, on the other Planet of the Apes movies, on the Burton one, on Rise, we're not getting our world taken over. Like, we're not seeing, like, we're seeing remnants. It's only 10 years later, and we're seeing that 76 gas station and the Golden Gate Bridge and, like, things that we know from our world that have like, how they have, like, nature has healed, right? Like, that, like, the trees have overgrown and things look, like, similar but different.
It's got sort of like a Walking Dead zombie movie vibe to it a little bit, but in a way that, like, isn't scary. Like, the Walking Dead universe is, like, the humans haven't learned yet to completely run away from the apes. They are going to learn by the end of this movie to run away. But I really love the subplot and then the execution of the restoring of the dam for the power supply. Mm-hmm. And the fact that, like, Caesar is willing to help them because he trusts humans, because it's a previous movie, that he's willing to give them a chance. And this movie doesn't oversaturate you with anything outside of the Giacchino score, except for one tremendous needle drop halfway through this movie. I mean, I've talked in the past about how much I love The Last Waltz and The Band, and The Wait by The Band might be one of my favorite songs of all time, and I had totally forgotten that that's the song that plays when they restore the power to the gas station. And when that started, like, I was smiling so broadly. I was so happy. I was like, I know that this isn't gonna work out, but just for a second, this might actually work out. this is great. And it filled me with that specific moment that is like halfway through the movie, just filled me with such joy. I was like, oh my God, this movie is totally working for me.
Yeah, I think that scene with the music, like you see the impact, like you see the weight. Yeah. To steal that
exactly
that pun. When they hear that song, and I had forgotten about that as well. And when they hear the music, it's like it's been 10 years. Like the world has totally changed. I think like totally being evocative of like 10 years post a pandemic, which killed a lot more people than the pandemic we lived through. I think that also carries a different resonance now. I think, you know, before we were talking a little bit about the beginning of this movie and the opening. And
yes.
Kevin, I don't know if have you watched this movie post-pandemic, or is this your first time revisiting it since we've lived through that trauma?
Boy, that is hard to remember just because I don't remember time. I think this might be the first time I rewatched it post-pandemic. Mm-hmm. And it does hit differently, but also in the like, yeah, of course we turned against each other and it led to our own downfall. Like, yeah, that of course. Like that is what happened for so much of us now. So like none of it became surprising anymore. And it really, the pandemic changes my POV on the more hopeful movies about humanity getting through pandemics. But like this movie, I think hit like a weird spot, obviously in the beginning as you're watching it all shake out. Because like to me, it just became like a lot more or less like, oof. Yeah, that's us all right. Which again leads a little bit of credence to like what's going on. And like, you know, Koba's entire argument is that, you know, humans can't be trusted. Humans are bad. Humans will hurt us. And yeah, we hurt each other. Like, of course, we're going to also hurt, you know, the apes as well. Obviously, there is good in us, which is, I think, part of what this story is about. But also the tragedy of those elements being that maybe there isn't enough good. That leads to all of this. But like, yeah, it's weird to say the least.
Well, and even they say lab leak, like the words lab leak are said in that opening montage. Mm-hmm. And like immediately my like sensors went off. I was like very heightened. I was like, oh my God, that's, they did not know when they made this movie that lab leak would be like as buzzy, and as triggering as it is said, even though, I guess this technically was a lab leak. This one was actually that is correct. I think another thing that like this movie does so well, and it does it some in Rise, but it does it better in this, is like, at least for me, it got me in the POV of the apes so much that I was like, if this actually happened, I would understand the apes feeling this way about humans.
100%.
Like if they suddenly had like this massive intelligence spike and they're like, oh wait, we've been like locked up our whole lives and experimented on and treated as zoo animals. And like all of the things that we see in the first movie, and that's where the first movie does enhance this, because you see, and you see like Caesar gets to live with what is James Franco's character, Will Rodman, Dennis Rodman's cousin, Will Rodman. He like, you know, he's like swinging around his house, he's like living a little bit more free, but there is like the neighbor who is really mean to him that ends up being patient zero for this virus outbreak at the end. But then Koba is locked up the whole movie by Brian Cox, which two movies I watched this week with Brian Cox in it. Another nice little bit of connection to X-Men. Yep. And he's abused. He's like, they spray him with the hose. He's got, in this movie, he's got the scars. So you get the reminders of it. But his experience with humans, he's never had a good experience with humans. Of course he would, like, it sort of simplifies down the depth a little bit, where it's like, well, this character had a good experience with humans, so he's pro-human. And this one had a bad experience with humans, so he's anti-human. But it's kind of a shorthand way to get you to like these two different styles of like how they can save the apes and fight against humanity or live with humanity, I guess.
Yeah. And it's interesting because it also does that depth a little bit, where I wish that it did a little more with the two like ultimate antagonist versions of the human characters, where you get the young research guy who's just a dick, just prejudiced from the beginning, but like also.
Which one is that? Is that the guy from Oz?
Yeah.
I don't remember what the actor's
name. Yeah, I don't remember his name, but he's like, he's a dick from the beginning.
Kirk Acevedo.
He shoots Ash at the beginning. He's a jerk, but then he's like, they like even though he's trying to hide the fact that he has a gun, he's also trying to keep the monkey away from the gun to hurt and keep him from hurting himself. And nobody understands why he like freaked out, and he doesn't get to explain himself, which I think is actually good that this movie doesn't allow him to explain himself, because I think that adds like a it shifts the focus of it. If they gave him that moment to explain himself and why he freaked out, it would shift the focus of the sympathy of the moment away from the apes to him. And you don't want that as a viewer. But on the other hand, we are specifically given a moment of empathy for Gary Oldman's character, where he's the power is restored and he's scrolling through photos on his iPad, not an iPad, and he comes across photos of his family, and like you realize like this guy's lost everything. Like he's you don't really get that depth with the Jason Clark character as much, but you get a moment of empathy for this guy who's still going to turn around and try to blow everybody up to save humanity, but you sort of understand why he is the way he is. And I think you're also, it's important that you're also getting that from our two lead apes in Cobra and Caesar. So like this movie does such a good job at, even in smaller scale, showing dimensions of both the humanity POV and the ape POV.
It's really well done in that regard, right? Like the two sides of the story. And I think it works, again, in the favor of the narrative they ultimately end up building and seeing how it all shakes out. And I think that having these multiple perspectives work, but still keeping it from the ape POV ultimately is where it excels. It's so easy, I think, for a lot of these movies to just fall into the, it's about the humans and we're going to feel bad for the humans. But the first one, I think, set the tone. And then this carried it through. Like, Matt Reeves picked up that baton and was just like, I know where the finish line is. I'm going. And it just really, really pans out. And, like, I think the other thing is, unexpectedly, and I think this is also a Matt Reeves thing, this movie, and, like, we see it in Batman, too, right? Like, we sit with the characters in a very interesting way. Like, there's this quiet where you are just with Caesar or with the apes, and you're just kind of sitting there with them as they are just being contemplative or like staring at a thing or thinking. And it's just really somehow like makes it more intimate and like brings you literally closer to them. And I think it helps bond you with these characters, and Caesar especially. Like, so much of these movies are about Caesar, and he is such a fascinating character and like so like well-rounded and tragic. Like, the whole story is that he never, like, he wanted to take the apes to the woods. He wanted to liberate them, take them to the woods, and just live in peace. He never wanted to be the leader of a revolution, like, in that way. He never wanted to, like, go to war. He never wanted to wear the crown, so to speak, right? Like, and he now is. Like, he is thrust into it at the end of this movie, and I love that, too, right? Like, the movie opens and ends in a very great shot where the beginning of the movie is this pull out from close on his eyes, and the movie ends with this zoom in on his eyes, right? And it's really excellent. Like, this goes to that direction that I think is so brilliant.
Yeah, very evocative of Lost, much like the Giacchino score. Like, it, and I know Matt Reeves also did Cloverfield, which I think was produced by Abrams or Bad Robot. Like, I think that's connected
to Bad Robot. Yes, I believe that's correct.
Yeah, so that was all I was thinking of as we like close in on Caesar's eyes. I also love, and it's set up not in this movie, but set up in Rise, that his name is Caesar. I mean, Caesar's not. I don't think Caesar is the name of any of the apes in the original series.
Yes, eventually.
Is there? Okay.
Yeah.
But like, you know, like obviously you're thinking of Julius Caesar, right? Like, you're thinking, and like the fact that he's named Caesar, and then he is stabbed in the back by one of the people he's leading, and they like
Etu Koba.
Yeah. Right. Yes. Yeah. I mean, it's, I guess it's good that his name wasn't Brute, because it would just be like way too on the nose. but you know, like I don't know. I like that. I like that wink. I like that gets a payoff in this movie. I think I saw a review from somebody about this movie that was like, oh, that's why he's named Caesar. You know, like it is really good. I just think it's like good storytelling. you know, it seems that they came in with some sort of a plan with what to do. I don't know what the production looked like for Rise, but I would imagine they had sequels in mind when they made Rise. And they actually were able to pay them off, unlike Tim Burton's movie. And the other thing, there's something else I wanted to go back to, which is like the fact that we're getting a fourth sequel or a fourth movie in the series this week. And I would be curious, now that we've had this movie, we say how this movie looks different now watching it post-pandemic, like seeing how people, how humans actually reacted when they were faced with a global pandemic, much like they face in this. Like, I wonder if any of that will be resonant in Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes, even though it's going to take, I think it takes place generations later, where it really, there's very few humans. But I just, if they're getting more into like the lore and kind of Caesar is more of like this biblical figure for the apes. Right. If there's going to be some look at like how humans reacted now that we have that knowledge.
I think that's exactly where it's going. Like the very little bit that I have read, I haven't watched much of a trailer. I saw part of one and I was just like, oh no, that'll do it. And I got to get out of here. And so like I ran away because I try to avoid that stuff. But I do know the movie is like 300 years later. So it's quite a long time. But like part of the movie is very much about Caesar is this, not biblical necessarily, but like it's a biblical maybe is close, but this huge figure who had lessons to teach, and now it becomes 300 years later. How has those lessons been altered, changed, interpreted? Which I think is once again very relevant to today.
For sure.
Yeah,
like that feels spot on. Now, how they handle it, that's the big question. I think that, you know, in Matt Reeves' hand. The stuff that they were addressing with this, with the ones we watched here with Dawn and what will be with War, excellently done. We'll see how this one goes, right? Like, you know, it's the same producers, which doesn't always mean it's going to be good. Could producers do, well, who knows what producers do?
Yeah, I mean, it's the director is Wes Ball. And you would probably only know his name if you were a fan of the Maze Runner series, which I've never seen. I know you did, Kevin, you did the YA series. Did you guys cover Maze Runner?
We did. We absolutely covered Maze Runner there on Post Show Recaps on YA. Melissa and I watched all three movies and talked about them. We actually did really enjoy the movies, especially the later ones. There's some quibbles, I think, in the first one and stuff, but I think by the end, we thought it was pretty good, like how they handled it. It's not perfect, but it was very well done. And I think part of it is the direction. You know, we'll see how it all shakes up because he's basically just the Maze Runner. That's it.
Right.
And the writer, I just looked. I thought he was the writer. He's not. It's Josh Friedman wrote it. He also did War of the Worlds, which we've done on this podcast. The Black Dahlia, which has been suggested. Kingdom of Planet of the Apes. Avatar 4, he is slated to write.
Wow.
And he's slated to write next year's Fantastic Four movie.
So,
interesting that we're...
we'll see how this shakes out, baby.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. Good litmus.
Let's see what happens. Yep.
Yeah, I think, like, I talked a little bit about it, but I really, really liked a lot of the action in this, even though some of the CGI I thought didn't hold up that well. Like, there's one shot where we're seeing the tank, and the tank is spinning, and the camera is just spinning.
I love that. It's so video game-esque. Like, it's very, like, first-person shooter video game style. Like, I thought that was a really cool, really cool visual. Yeah.
Yeah. And even, like, the scenes where Malcolm is, like, going to get the meds, and we're, like, following him through the house. Just, like, a lot of like, effective action sequences in this.
Yeah, for sure.
I think that's, and, like, we see that reflection. Like, those are such great call-outs. I think the wonder when he's trying to get the meds is really good, and that tank shot as you're seeing it from the perspective, and then, like, you know, Koba's jumping. I believe it's Koba who jumps on it and, like, takes control of it and, like, guides it into, like, down the barrier. Right
door,
It's this first-person POV on that is so cleverly done, and we see, again, I think that direction evolution, when you get to stuff like Batman, like, such clever action is probably the way to put it, right? Like, there's like, look, I love action movies, right? Like, I'm an 80s kid. Like, action movies are my thing. I love Die Hard, obviously. Like, but there's a huge difference between, I think, the action of movies like that and then elevated action. God, I want to punch myself for saying those words, but, like, my wife doesn't love action movies. She thinks action movies are boring because most action is shot in a boring way. But with this movie and things like Mad Max Fury Road, for example, or Dune, there's an epicness to the how the action is shot and done that I think is unparalleled, right? Like, it's things that could, like, make action fans out of people who don't love action.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was thinking a lot about the car chase in the Batman. That's like the, like, I've watched Batman a couple times, but that car chase with the Penguin, when Batman is chasing the Penguin, and like, we get like the upside down camera and the flames, and like,
oh yeah,
that,
and the,
I just was thinking a lot about that watching this, and I was like, I can see how the guy who made this movie would go on to make
make a Batman movie. I mostly thought about it from the ending with the final fight between Cobra and Caesar, and then he's hanging off the ledge, and Cobra picks him up and basically does the Batman, I don't have to save you.
Yeah,
and then he just drops him. Mm-hmm. I'm not gonna kill you, but I don't have to save you. And then drops him. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, it's. So I was like, oh yeah, Caesar is Batman. All right.
And one other shot that I really love, and this is a shot that's in the trailer too, but it's when the apes first come to the like encampment or like
when they're riding through on the horses. That is so wonderful.
Yeah. Not that one, but when the door opens to reveal them.
Yeah,
and it's just like the curtains being pulled back. I think that, like, we've been very positive on this, and I think, like, this movie is really, like, is way better than a Planet of the Apes movie has any business being, I think.
For sure.
I do feel like the fact that they say at one point, Maurice says it's been 10 winters, so I appreciate that they tell you how long it's been.
Yeah.
But I feel like this would not have taken 10 years to get to this point. The apes would have discovered the humans would have discovered the apes. In like a year or two. Like, I just don't think, like, I think at 10 years we wouldn't be at this point. I think this should be like 2, maybe 3 years past. I like that humanity has changed and we're seeing like how life has, you know, inside of this quarantine zone, how life has changed. We get some references to the outside world, but I don't know. Did the 10 year timeline, did that bother either of you guys?
It didn't bother me, mainly because like, the first movie sort of establishes that the apes went to the Muir Woods and have sort of started to claim that territory, right? And, like, I think that's the kicker, is that the humans knew. They're dealing with their own stuff, but they kind of knew. It's just like, hey, there's a bunch of, like, intelligent, violent apes that live in there. Like, let's not go that way. And the only reason that they did is because they thought they could find, you know, where the dam was, but it became like they accidentally entered this territory and were probably surprised that the apes, to an extent, didn't just kill each other the way they would have. And I think that's the part, right? Like, the apes clearly wanted to stay hidden for 10 years. And I think the humans knew like not to venture into certain parts of the big woods.
Yeah, that definitely was the impression I got from the first meeting with the humans and the apes when they first come across each other, is that they you know, and Caesar even says it when he goes down into San Francisco and meets with the only character. He's like, you know, human home, ape home, never the twain shall meet. Don't cross the bridge. Don't cross the streams. Mm-hmm. Don't, you know, you stay your side, my side, your side.
Like, and the bridge is good for that visual of like the separation between the two of them. Also, the as I just watched X-Men: The Last Stand, the Golden Gate Bridge also plays a role in that movie. So
connections. Listen, if it's a movie in San Francisco, the Golden Gate Bridge is going to be there somehow, shape, or form. It's going to be a major.
Especially if Tommy Wiseau made that movie. All right. Well, anything that you guys want to get to before we get to feedback? Anything that we haven't touched on this movie?
Go ahead, Brendan.
Go ahead, Kevin. No, I'll save it for my one last thing.
Kevin, what's your thing?
So I also really appreciate, I mean, we touched about this, but I do appreciate the story from Blue Eyes' perspective, right? Like, Caesar's son, who was born into a specific type of world. Like, we talk about, like, the Cyclops sometimes, right? Like, my love of Cyclops. Like, that's sort of where the Blue Eyes position is here. Like, he was born into this different world. He was raised by the teachings of his dad. And then you have the Cobra trying to push him into ways. He witnesses his friend getting shot. And, like, what does that lead to? And, like, he's kind of on the side of Cobra for a bit. But then that falls away as he sees, like, how far and how extreme Cobra's being. And I like the reunion with him and Caesar, I think, is really sweet. It's again, beautiful, this movie does a weird job making me very emotional for...
Yeah.
Apes, like,
for mocap apes.
Maurice is like the most lovable freaking character in this movie.
Yes.
How do you not love
Maurice?
Love Maurice. protect Maurice at all costs. When Maurice is in the cage, it's like so sad. And then when
don't
they
watch Rise of the Planet of the Apes, then Brendan, if you don't like Maurice in a cage,
the shot when they bust out of the bus might be my actual favorite action set piece of the film. Is the when they all start shaking the bus and then they bring it to the side. Like, I thought that was so like wonderfully done, and probably very little practical effect, but they did a good job of making it look like a practical effect, even if it was all CGI'd.
Yeah, I feel like with the CGI, and I talked about this a little bit, it's much more of a problem, I think, with Rise. Some of the CGI in Rise looks very bad. With this, it mostly looks good, but there were scenes where I'm just like, I feel like I'm watching a video game cutscene right now.
Right.
And I'm just like, I don't know if it's like a recent thing, I just feel like I'm more sensitive to like really bad looking CGI. And it doesn't have to be super lifelike. I don't know. There's just some like uncanny valley something about it where it just bugs me. Like, I actually saw a clip from Captain America Civil War, a movie I love, of the airport fight. And they were all walking towards each other. And I was like, oh my God, this looks like a cartoon. And I'd never really noticed that before.
I'm telling you, I think it's just your TV. You need to get a
different
TV. No,
this was on my laptop that I was watching.
Well, stop watching things on your laptop.
It was a link to a tweet. It was a video on Twitter of like the Iron Man and the Cap team walking towards each other. And I was like, man, Iron Man looks like he is just a cartoon. It's fine. You can suspend your disbelief, but I do think like there are certain stuff. I think Shogun has that problem as well, where like some of the CGI in Shogun and the digital effects just look like very, very like inauthentic to me. And it just bugs me.
It's so crazy when you think about this, though, because like this is a 10-year-old movie. Mm-hmm. That is older than, I believe, Captain America Civil War, right? Like, or as old, maybe.
This was the same year as Guardians of the Galaxy. So, yeah.
Civil War was
2016? Yeah. So, it just kind of shows, like, the whole thing with this is that Andy Serkis really wanted, and, you know, the company wanted to put in the effort and showcase what good effects can be if you take your time and you do it right. Mm-hmm. And you see the long-lasting, like, effects of it. Like, this movie holds up so well despite being 10 years old, where so many other movies, to your point, just get dated. I see this a lot. I'm not going to talk about Avatar. Yeah, I'm not going to talk about Avatar because I'm never going to talk about it. But James Cameron, when you look at like Terminator or Terminator 2 or Aliens even, Aliens holds up psychotically well for a movie that old. And like, to be fair, that one is because he was committed to practical effects. But even then, Cameron tries to use as much cutting edge technology as he can to make sure a thing doesn't feel too dated. And too often today, there's just so much of just like, we just got to get it out. We just got to get out. Cut corners. Right. Like, that's a modern day thing. And you see the effect of it. It becomes dated within a year or two. And this is still here rocking out, where you can see the emotion and depth in Caesar's eyes. Andy Serkis deserved an award. I mean, like, for that's sure. not my yeah. one last thing. But one other thing, Andy Serkis deserves a goddamn award for this.
He actually should have two, because he should have one for Gollum, damn it.
Yeah.
In a movie that might come up later.
Yeah. I as you were talking, Kevin, I was thinking about a couple movies. One is like, this movie looks so much better than Quantumania, which is a movie that came out last year. Yeah. So we do have that.
I know, Kevin, I know.
The one good part about Quantumania is now no longer part of the cinematic universe. The other movie I was thinking about when you're talking about Cameron is the Abyss, which I saw Abyss in theaters last year, and that movie also looks awesome for being like very old movie. So,
it's
the water.
Yeah, it's just like the dated is a good word. That's a word I'm going to start using for when I'm like, I can't put my finger on the word for like when the CGI doesn't look good, but it's that dated look. There's a little bit of that in this, more of it in Rise, a lot of it in X-Men: The Last Stand, to dial back to some other movies that I've watched this week. So cool. Anything else from you, Brendan, before we hop on to feedback? All right,
let's do it.
All right, feedback. The first box office, this opened July 11th 2014, sorry. So we're almost at the 10-year anniversary, just 2 months shy of that. Side note, 2014, just like an incredible year for movies. I was looking at my top 10. Yeah, well, I was just looking at my top 10 of 2014. Because I was like, oh, well, spoilers a little bit for my review. I'm like, oh, well, I slot this movie in my top 10. And I don't think that there is a spot for this movie in my top 10 because this year is so strong with other movies. My number 10 is Edge of Tomorrow. I've got Guardians of the Galaxy, Grand Budapest, Nightcrawler, Interstellar, Days of Future Past, Birdman, Gone Girl, Winter Soldier, and Whiplash. It's like, I can't kick any of those off my top 10.
No, absolutely not.
So, yeah.
There's some I haven't seen, so I'm happy to replace some of them, I guess.
All right.
It's a great year for movies, though. Yeah.
I think you should see all of them. I think you would like all of the movies on my list.
For sure.
Have you seen Nightcrawler? X-Men?
Non-X-Men. I have not seen Nightcrawler. I have seen Whiplash, but I haven't seen Birdman.
Sure. I think Birdman's one that might Birdman. Not. Yeah, I think that might be one that may not hold up as well as my memory of it, because I've only seen the one time. The whole movie's a one take. And it's like Michael Keaton, you know, kind of commentary on his Batman character. Like, I would be curious. Someday maybe we'll get to Birdman, Brendan. We should put that on the list.
This movie, it's funny, when this movie opened at number one, Zach, it earned like 10 times the amount of money that the movie that came in at number two earned. It was a smash freaking hit its opening weekend. It was crazy.
It was no Fall Guy, that's for sure.
Yeah.
It's just a date when we recorded this podcast. Yes, it was number one. Up against Transformers Age of Extinction. I almost said Edge of Extinction. Yes. So, yes, we've got those two movies. They're pretty similar movies, I feel like. Number three was Tammy, which I think was a Melissa McCarthy comedic
movie. That sounds right, yeah.
Yep. Number four, 22 Jump Street. Number five, How to Train Your Dragon 2.
Oh, man.
Number six movie I've never heard of, Earth to Echo. Never heard of that. I don't know if... I don't know if that is. I don't think anything else. Edge of Tomorrow is at 13, so that's a movie we've done on this podcast.
Great movie.
And also X-Men Days of Future Past at 16. So
great movie. That had been out for a while now, yeah.
Yeah, another connection to the X-Men franchise.
So 2 weeks later, in its third week, it'll drop to number three behind two absolutely ridiculous forgotten movies. Kevin, Lucy, the Scarlett Johansson choice.
Yeah.
And Dwayne The Rock Johnson's version of Hercules.
That was 2014.
What were we doing in July 2014? What were we doing? What choices were we making as a culture in July of 2014? Awful, guys. Come on.
I feel like that Hercules movie came out like 2009. I can't believe that was 2014.
I know. Oh my god.
A couple other notes. Godzilla, the 2014 Godzilla, was in theaters still. That was at number 24, way down there. Yep. I podcasted about that once upon a time on Post Show Recaps in the early days of Post Show Recaps.
The opposite problem for me, which is why I didn't like that movie. Like a movie where you're taking me into the Planet of the Apes. You were smart enough to go, you know who this is about? The apes, not the humans. And then Godzilla and every subsequent goddamn movie in that universe was like, you know who this movie should be about? The humans. Hey, I don't give a damn about the humans. I came here to see Godzilla. He's in the title.
Let's have the characters a podcast
versus Godzilla. Have them fight, please. That's what I'm here to see. Not
let's
you.
The character is a podcaster, because that's something that every film is doing now.
Kevin, I take it you have not seen Godzilla Minus One.
Not yet.
You need to rectify that. Please go see it. Yeah.
I know.
It's
I'm waiting for my wife. As I mentioned, she doesn't like action films, but she's interested in that. So I'm holding on to the moments where I can watch an action movie with her.
That movie's incredible. Fair enough. Also, another just to connect a little bit back to what we were just talking about. Captain America: Winter Soldier was also in theaters, but it's in its 15th week of release. This is kind of the tail end of Winter Soldier.
Remember when we used to let films be out for 15 weeks?
That's wild. That's wild. 15 weeks is insane.
Yeah. I didn't see how many theaters it was in. Let's see. 15 weeks. Let me pull this back up. 15 weeks this movie was in 215 theaters. So not in
It was still spread. It was still there. Still. It was a lot of second run, but,
Dawn of the Planet of the Apes was in 4,000 theaters for comparison. So a little different.
Well, Fall Guy is going to be in week three, and it's going to be in 10 theaters.
And streaming on Amazon Prime. Streaming on Amazon Prime by January.
Just to go on a tangent, I did see today that Blade Runner 2099 is coming to Amazon Prime. Not even going to theaters. It's going to Amazon Prime.
Starring Michelle Yeoh.
It might be a TV show, though, somebody said.
Still, what are we doing?
I don't know. Yeah.
I don't know what we're doing anymore.
Kicking off feedback is Ron. He said, a beautiful tale of survival and the basic instinct, to secure a home. Well-crafted social dynamics of the apes creates quite the juxtaposition between the species. 4 stars.
There you go. Exactly. Short, sweet, to the point. Yep.
Yeah.
I think the politics of the apes is much, like, is much more interesting. Like, the human characters are just kind of, like, set dressing to me. The Malcolm character, like, he's fine, but I'm much more interested in Koba versus Caesar than I am with anything going on with the humans.
I think that's the entire point of why you cast somebody like a Jason Clark, who's sort of a character actor who the things he's done have sort of been, like, side character or bad guy characters in films. Mm-hmm. So that, like, if you come in, his bad guy persona allows you to sort of, the film to sort of subvert your expectations for him and what his role was going to be in the film, and then also sort of underestimate him a little bit. And he can also be that window dressing, like you said.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, and again, like, the movie being from Caesar's perspective, it's really about Caesar's reflection, like, how Caesar feels about him, right? Like, I do love that line, that moment. Like, one of my favorite moments, actually, that we didn't even hit was when Caesar's looking at the videotape of him and Will when Caesar was a kid. I thought that was such a sweet moment. And you have that moment of him asking, like, who was that? And he's like, a good man like you. And I think that says so much without even having to have seen the original. So much is done in just that moment, which is, hey, guys, that's how you write a script. You don't need a ton of exposition. You can just sometimes deliver one line and you get so much info. Like, goddamn, this movie's good. The script is tight. Like, that's just great.
Did you guys miss the James Franco character not being in this movie? Did you feel like he should have been, besides that archival footage?
No, because he's a distraction.
Yeah, agreed. I think that, like, the movie works for him not being there, because I do think that has to be a thing of Caesar's past, and you cannot have that come back in that way. It has to be a loss, but Caesar is still reflective of it, and, like, it shapes him, and it's something he misses. You can't have that here, because it has to be something that's gone from him that he is still moving forward with, though, despite all of it. And I think, like, that's a key thing.
I think it distracts the main plot if he's one of the human characters, for sure.
He lets, at the end of Rise, like, he goes into Muir Woods with Caesar, and Caesar, like, goes up into the tree and, like, forms his community, and it's kind of like he's letting him go. So it does kind of in that aspect. And it allows them to, like, I like that they recast with different humans each of these movies as well.
I think so too. I think that's a good deal. All right, Travis writes in and says, an overall fun watch, a little paint by numbers, and the ending suckers from setting up the next movie versus coming to a conclusion. You can understand the motivation of Koba, which is key to me in the popcorn good versus evil movies. The CGI was also very impressive, and I would give the visual effects team an MVP. Jason Clark did not work for me at all. Most of all, I found the monkey noises grating for 2 hours. 3 stars, though, from Travis. The sound effects didn't bother me, especially with the monkey sounds. I thought that I understand what he's saying about the ending, but I also think that when you're telling a story like this, and you want to know that there's going to be a sequel, you know, like, I prefer knowing that they're setting up a sequel.
So I was surprised there was no post-credit scene. I actually, because it went to the little box on Max, and I made it the big box and fast-forwarded all the way to the end just to see if there was a post-credit scene. There wasn't. There was in the first one, which is basically the end of 12 Monkeys, where the pilot is at the airport, and he's the neighbor of Caesar and Will, and his nose is dripping, which means he's infected with this virus, and he's about to get on a plane, and that's kind of how things spread. So I do like that we get the post-credit scene in the first one. I actually think this one, like, it does set up the next movie, but it also is open-ended enough that if there never was another movie, it's kind of like,
agreed.
We're in war now. That's, like, it's kind of...
That's sort of my, like, thought, is that I don't think this movie necessarily sets up another movie, but sets up what we know about the franchise, right? Like, honestly, the most hilarious thing about each of these movies is that they could end and you're still fine. Because, like, we know that the eventualities, Planet of the Apes, and they all end in such a way that the story feels complete, and the story trying to be told in this particular film feels complete. Because this particular film really was about Caesar's journey and the struggle between them. and what the future is going to be. And the ending, you don't need to see the war. I'm glad that they did give it to us, because it also gave it to us in a way that we weren't expecting it. But like, that's this movie, you know, and it ends in a way that you get the complete journey for Caesar and you get a complete journey for the characters. And you don't have to see it because, you know, eventually we'll get to the Planet of the Apes and that's where it's going to go. And you feel like that's what's going to happen regardless. So I actually think they're very clever in that. This is actually another point to why this trilogy rocks, is because they are smart enough to be like, this is a complete story one way or another, and it's not dependent on what's going to come next, which is a fallacy for most things, including the 2001 version.
Yeah, and I think that's the brilliance of, like, rebooting a film franchise that majority of people, their cultural knowledge of this is literally just, it's a planet full of apes and somebody yelling, get your hands off me, you dirty ape. The 95% of the people that went to see these movies probably never saw a single one of the original movies. They only have the cultural, like, zeitgeist context. So if the movie ended and there was never another one, they could sort of think about, you know, well, that's okay, because whatever, the ending is probably whatever those movies are from the 60s that I'm never going to watch. So they're like, you're not left with a sense of longing, aside from wanting to continue the Caesar story, not necessarily wanting to see more giant Planet of the Apes spectacle. Like, you know, because you and can...
I don't remember the end of War feeling like I really wanted to see what happens next. It's been a while since I've seen that. I'll be curious when I watch that this week how I feel. But that makes me both excited but also kind of trepidatious about Kingdom, because I'm like, well, we wrapped up the story. Although if now we're reflecting on the story 300 years later, maybe it's worth it. I don't know. I don't know what to expect.
I'm very curious. Kingdom. Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't know. Sorry if I cut you off. Did you have anything else?
Mm-mm. You're good. Okay. Go ahead.
All right. Jim. Right, we're up to Jim. He says, Dawn of the Planet of the Apes was fine, but nowhere near as good as the predecessor. I wonder if he means Rise.
I think he means Rise. Yeah.
Maybe he means the Tim Burton one. He continues. He says, in that, I guess it's like the original Planet of the Apes pentology, where the first movie is by far the best. Mm. It's also like the original series in that a lot of the plot points don't make much sense, and the battle scenes look very dated. Dawn started well and ends okay, but the middle is a mess. I can see how it drags a little bit in the middle, but he says, did they set up the apes riding horses in Rise of the Planet of the Apes? Because, well, the apes riding horses looks cool. It doesn't make much sense. 3 stars. They do not set that up in the first movie.
It's a total power move, and I love it. Like, it's total. It's a total power move to show their dominance of humanity. Like, yeah,
they do start showing it in Rise, actually, when they're on the they're on the police horse and they flip on top of it.
That's right, in the first attack. I just watched that movie and I didn't even remember that. I also like the marketing that we've seen, like, out. I don't know, Kevin, have you seen out in New York?
Apes on horses. I didn't see them because I don't go outside.
Yes.
But like, I did see
on the Golden Gate Bridge.
Oh damn, that's cool.
Yeah. And his hero of the movie was Jason Clark. So he did not feel that Jason Clark was didn't work like Travis.
That's fine.
So 3 stars for Jim.
There you go. All right. Alex says that beginning hits a little different these days.
Yep.
That's for sure. It was my second watch of this movie, and while still very good, I did find myself a little less enamored than I did the first time. I think the human characters fall mostly flat, even though Gary Oldman gets to act his ass off in a few scenes. Where it really shines is with the apes, especially Cobra, an all-time villain, corrupted by rage and hate, and truly diabolical. Shout out to Maurice as well for being awesome. So, with a slight rating bump from Cobra, I will land this at a 4.25 out of 5. 4.25 out of 5. So there you go. Yep. Yeah. Good review from Alex.
I also love the moment as we're on the Cobra situation and like the diabolical, like he befriends and like goofs with those two. You're treating him like crap, so we get to act like a dumb monkey. But then when he grabs the gun later and he's like swinging it, then he just like turns immediately and just guns him down.
It's like
wild. Love it.
I can't believe we didn't talk about the scene, because that might be the best scene of the movie. Really good. I love, like, the ingenuity of Koba to be like, oh, I can take advantage of these guys by making them think I'm, like, this dumb ape. Like, it's just so, it's so smart. And then it is so, like, menacing when he grabs that gun. And, like, I think this movie also is showing that, like, everything got amplified between the apes and the humans because of guns, because of humans' fascination with guns. If there was no gun in that first scene with the guy from Oz where he shoots Ash or whoever, this war, like, that is the spark that the shot heard around the world. That is the spark that, like, ignites this whole thing. Mm-hmm. That, like, and then Caesar getting shot by Koba, and Koba shooting the humans, and the human, like, when he comes there, they're practicing with all the weapons. Like, it really is like, wow, guns really, like, this, guns, they were the living worst. In decent harmony until guns came into the picture.
Yep.
Guns are the worst.
All right. Robbie closes us out. He says, the first movie in this trilogy is good and enjoyable, but it's crazy how much better this and the third movie are. The CGI in this is so good. 4 stars from Robbie. So
nice. Yeah.
I do agree with him on the elevation between the two movies, obviously. I started a Letterboxd list. I haven't made it public yet because I'm still working on it, but it's like two is better than one. Where, like, not necessarily the second movie being better, but just, like, series where a follow-up movie is better than the original. I'm only choosing one movie per series to put on that list. So, like, I put X2 on that list, obviously. You know, Terminator 2.
You're going to have to go see Inside Out 2 this summer and tell us.
I know, yeah. I'm going to have to see all of these stupid-ass sequels coming out. Fury Road, you know. So, yeah.
Well, technically, that's Temple not, like, Doom. The second, right? That's technically, like, the third or fourth.
Yeah, no, it doesn't have to be the second. It just has to be like,
oh, got it.
It's like, it just has to be a I'm calling it two is better than one, but it's like a follow-up is better than the first.
Yeah, Ragnarok's a good one. I mean, there's clearly there's better probably than a couple Ragnarok, like obviously like Winter Soldier better than the first one. There's a couple.
Yeah,
I mean, debatable all day about Aliens, but I do rank Aliens better than Alien, but like better such a weird statement because they both are.
It's so they're so perfect. I always go back and forth in my head every time I watch one or the other of them.
For sure.
I'm like, okay, this one's number one. This one's number one. This one's number one.
And I'm intentionally leaving Aliens and Alien off of that list, and Godfather 2 off of that list, because, like, I think that there is a debate both ways. Mm-hmm. Like, it is not clearly, for me, it is not clearly that one is better than the other. Like, I think they both, and they're like, Terminator 2, I do think is better than Terminator 1, but it's another one where, like, the sequel is just like very different than the original. Right. It's like a totally different style than the original. So anyways, that's a tangent for a podcast where we said we're going to try to go short.
All right, 3.65 overall from the listeners.
All right, Kevin, what's your score?
Much higher, 4.5.
Nice.
I mean, honestly, it's hard pressed for me not to give it a 5, but that's only because I haven't rewatched Dawn or War yet, which might get it, but like we'll have to see it. I have to rewatch it. But yeah, I love this movie. I think it's almost flawless. 4.5.
Nice. I'm not quite at the point where I think I can give it a 4.5 as much as I loved my watch last night. I'm gonna go with a 4. I do think that so much of this movie works, and especially the way that it amplifies the original, it sets up just an action-packed sequel that I definitely will also rewatch this week before I go see Kingdom.
That was going to be my weekend. Question for you.
I'll be watching it. Yeah, before, nice. So, 4 for me. Zach?
I am shocked that I'm higher on this movie than you, Brendan. The way we were talking, I thought you were going to be the high one and I was going to be the lower one. But I'm with Kevin. I'm at a 4.5. I think this movie is like, it does some stuff that, you know, I have qualms with. I don't get the warm and fuzzy, so it doesn't get the 5. But I just think, like, this movie does not have any business being this good. I know Jim doesn't quite agree with me on that, but you know, I think another qualm I would have is like the humans really are not interesting to me at all, which I think I said earlier. I mean, Gary Oldman, it's fun to see him, but I don't think he really does anything in this, but whatever. This is Planet of the Apes. It's not Planet of the Humans, so that's fine.
Exactly. And I also, just from a technical standpoint, right? Like, that's the thing, like, when I think about this movie, it's not just the plot, which I think is so solid, so strong, but it's also the writing, which I mentioned is very tight. Like, listen, Apes Together Strong is just, was like, signed in the first movie, said by Koba in this movie, but, like, is such a great rallying cry in my head forever. And well done and well said. But also, we're looking at the score, the direction itself, like the cinematography. There's just so much technical aspects of this film that excel in ways that I feel like other movies don't most of the time. And it comes together in a wonderful package.
Yeah. Matt Reeves really, like, I also think the Batman was so much better than it had any business being.
Yeah.
Like,
that's Batman a 5 out of 5 movie for me. That's a 6 out of 5 movie.
Like, that's one that, like, on the rewatch, I like that even more. And Cloverfield was one that I remember seeing the teaser for Cloverfield in the theaters way back in 2007, 2008, and being so excited for that movie. And, like, that movie just, like, is so, like, wholly unlike anything else that had come out to that point. So, like, Matt Reeves really, maybe I should go back and watch The Pallbearer. Because that's his only movie I haven't seen Let Me In, I guess, either. But
Paul Bear, Gwyneth
Paltrow
that.
Gwyneth Paltrow and David Schwimmer rom-com. Very surprising that that's a Matt Reeves joint.
Do you think Gwyneth Paltrow remembers being in The Pallbearer?
probably not.
Listen, sometimes you just got to take the check, right? And that's how fair. You get to make the other
that's
movies.
That's how you make goop.
Indeed.
Yeah.
All right, it's a 4.16 overall, which will average to a 4 for the purposes of Letterboxd.
Nice.
All
right, hero movie, Kevin?
What was that?
Hero of the movie.
Oh, hero of the movie. I thought you said here's the movie, and I'm like, what? here it is!
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, look, there's no one else but Caesar. I think literally, obviously, he's the hero of the movie, but, like, this just goes into what I was saying before. I think the CG, the acting by Andy Serkis, there's just so much that this movie, and I think the previous one, had to do to get people to buy in, and that is make a CG ape the most sympathetic character and, like, relatable character possible, and they did. And so, like, for me, like, it's unquestionably Caesar, just not even on the literal character front, but on the achievement front on multiple levels.
Mm-hmm. The whole package. Nice. Yep. Brendan, how about you?
Yeah, I wanted to give it to Caesar / Andy Serkis as well, but I'll go a different direction since Kevin already grabbed Caesar Serkis. I'm going to give it to Matt Reeves.
Yeah.
Batman Matt Reeves. I think that his direction in this is really phenomenal. He doesn't give in to a lot of the tropey action stuff that he could have, or the bad dialogue, or the unfocused making it about the humans. Like, he really, really elevated this, like everyone else said, to be a way better movie than it had any right to be. So Matt Reeves.
Nice. I was going to do Matt Reeves as well. So, I will, but I will also just shout out, I don't think we said her name once, but like Keri Russell, I don't think she's given a ton to do, but like, I think she's solid in what she does. And she has the medicine to save Caesar's wife. Which like guns start the war and medicine solves the war. And especially as we're tying back to, it doesn't really solve the war, but, helps ease tensions, I guess is better.
Yeah.
It, like, as we're tying back to, like, that opening and thinking about, like, COVID and the pandemic we just went through, like, medicine being important in these pandemics is important. So, I don't know.
You're going to give it to Keri Russell?
Matt Reeves, but honorable mention to Keri Russell. So,
cool.
All right. Connections. So, I mean, we've talked a lot through this already with connections. Yep. I did have a title connection, unless anybody else had a title connection.
I had a couple that I wrote down. The one I came up with last night while I was watching it, because we were talking about the Xavier Magneto thing, was what if we went with animal magnetoism as a play on animal magnetism?
Pretty good.
Yes.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, I had man versus mutant, because these apes are mutants. They are mutated apes.
These are both rare to me. I was just going to say the ape men, but
the ape men. That's not bad either. Ape dash man.
The ape dash man is pretty good too. Yeah, I kind of like that.
That's fine. We can do that. That's simple.
All right.
Any other connections to X-Men that you guys had?
Obviously we have a climactic fight on the top of a tower. That's pretty
coast
connected
this time, a west coast,
yeah, different
time.
Coast and, but
the Statue of Liberty was important in the original Planet of the Apes movies.
Very true.
And
I mentioned Golden Gate Bridge being in part 3 of that X-Men series. But we did have, like, that was the first movie in a trilogy. This, until this weekend, is part 2 of a trilogy. So we've kind of, like, just stepped to, you know, I have a feeling there's going to be a lot of part 3s on people's lists coming up for next week.
Yeah. I mean, obviously we have multiple scenes in this where apes / mutants grab guns out of other people's hands and point them at them. And then whether or not they shoot them is a big moment. We have that in, you know, with the Magneto scene that we spent a lot of time on last week. So there you go.
There's also an actor connection, but yep. We'll get to that because
I had one too. What was your actor connection?
My actor connection?
Did you say you had an actor connection to last week?
Yes, actor connection.
What is
to X-Men in general.
Yeah.
Yep. I wonder if it's the same one I have. What is it?
So it's Cody Smith.
Yep.
Yep. Spoiler. That's about to come up soon.
So Cody Smith McPhee does show up as Nightcrawler in the newer series. He's very Nightcrawler looking. Yes, I was going to say Nightcrawler. Yeah. Like, also, Brian Cox was in Rise of the Planet of the Apes. Brian Cox is in X2. So it's like a little bit of like parallel dimension. And then to connect to last week, but also to connect to other movies from this year is Assassinations of a Leader.
True.
We had that with Bulworth and with the candidate. And then also last week we had an Assassination of the Senator. I think that's the only big connection I had to other movies from this year. Brendan, do you have other connections?
Nothing really popped out at me. I don't even think we had a San Francisco movie or anything this year.
No, we have had very important, like, you know, we've talked about like the city being very important in a lot of these. We did have Chinatown, but that wasn't
San Francisco. That's true. That was LA.
Yeah. Nice guys.
That's but it did involve a dam and a power issue.
For water power. There you go. All right. Movie map. Movie that connects to the best from last year.
I honestly didn't have one. I looked and I could not come up with a good one. How about you?
I feel like Return of the Jedi isn't a bad one. Actually, no, 12 Monkeys.
Sure, the forest. Yeah, the Ewoks living in the forest and then they're forced to fight.
Now 12 Monkeys is my because of, like, all the post-apocalypse and the monkeys.
They're apes, not monkeys. How dare you?
But like the way the post-apocalyptic future looks in 12 Monkeys, not quite like this, because it's very much what's-his-face's vision, Terry Gilliam's vision. But like that, and the way that this starts, right, the end of Rise, which is not this movie, really tying into like the way 12 Monkeys ends. I'd also throw Looper and Batman Begins on there. So like I think actually a decent amount of connections to movies from last year. Cool. All right. One last thing. Kevin, you can go first.
One last thing is something I find very interesting, and it goes into the thought that they always put into these movies. You see it in the first one, but you really see it in this one. Caesar, interestingly, always stands upright. His posture, immaculate, and the reason why is because he was raised by humans. So when you look at the other apes and how they move, they still have ape-like movement, and they're always like hunched kind of, but from the first movie to now, Caesar's always fully upright when he walks around, and he walks like a human. So I just think it's this really interesting thing that they incorporated into that first film that they can do to transverse over, and you see that element. I just think it's very smart and very fascinating and interesting. So it was just one of those one last things I wanted to point out, because I always noticed that, and I found it very, you know, like a small detail that goes a long way.
I was thinking about that in a different aspect, in that like Caesar was the first of these apes to get this drug trial on him. He gets like actually injected in him, where it like becomes airborne for the rest of them to get it. So like you would think that he is the smartest of the apes, the most evolved, and they never really say that, but he's like one of the, you know, he's the first to speak, like he's the first to like kind of achieve these things. So I think that was also something I was thinking about watching this, and I'll be curious. I don't remember a lot of War of the Planet of the Apes, so I'm like very curious to watch that and see how some of these like through lines come watching them in succession, like I'm going to be. So, Brennan, what about you? You got one last thing?
So my one last thing is, we would be remiss. You asked me earlier, you know, what my knowledge of Planet of the Apes was outside of this trilogy. I, like most people of our generation, truly became familiar with Planet of the Apes, not through the movie or the planet, but through the multi-million-dollar musical that Troy McClure stars in in The Simpsons. Help me, Dr. Zaius. What's wrong? I could go into the whole thing, but that is one of the best Simpsons episodes that it was ever made, and one of the best Simpsons bits that has ever existed. If you've never seen The Simpsons Planet of the Apes takedown from Planet of the Apes the musical, it still holds up 30 years later. It is so wonderful. I rewatched it earlier this week just to make sure it was as great as I remember it. It absolutely is. So there you go. Simpsons Planet of the Apes the musical is my entry point for the Planet of the Apes. Nice. And my recommendation for what people need to watch before next week.
Is it a whole episode on there? It's just like one.
It's just a clip. It's a bit.
It's yeah. a bit. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. As you were talking about that, I realized my intro to Planet of the Apes was seeing the 2001 version in theaters with my brother. And like incredible. Being very, I remember just being very confused at the end. So I just looked it up. The tagline of that movie is, "You'll be sorry you were ever born, human." But it's like the fact that the tagline, if you take one, the last word off that tagline, it's, "You will be sorry you were ever born," is like, you're right. I saw this movie and I am sorry I was ever born. Like, it's like so perfect.
Dear God. For a term. What is wrong with you, Tim Burton?
Yeah. Mark, I'm like, that one's on Hulu. I'm a little tempted to watch that.
Oh my God.
Just to see if it's as bad as.
I did because I was doing my watches. It's as bad, yes.
We're going to be on this planet. It's forever. Yeah.
Like, what a cast.
Tell me these apes can talk? The Paul Giamatti one.
Yeah. Yeah, the Paul Giamatti is the orangutan. Yeah.
All right. For some reason, I had thought that Michael Clarke Duncan was in this one, but it's the other one. It's in the 2001.
It's the Tim Burton one, yeah.
Yeah.
Also, Helena Bonham Carter is in Tim Burton.
Of course, this is a Tim Burton movie.
Yeah.
All right. Cool. Well, we've got that final score, four stars. Now it's time to figure out what we're going to be watching next week. Will it be War of the Planet of the Apes? Maybe my homework will just be taking care of me. Will it be the 2001 version, which is on Hulu? Will be another one. We'll find out. Once we do pick that movie, send us your feedback at Ladder Movie on Twitter and Instagram, themovieladder@gmail.com. And send us your score, your next movie suggestions, your feedback, all that fun stuff. All right. Ron kicks us off, and he has a different ape movie. That is Gorillas in the Mist.
Yep.
That one wins.
Sigourney Weaver's?
Yeah. Sigourney Weaver is a research scientist. Yep. Yeah.
Did that win Best Picture? Was nominated for Best Picture? I feel like it had some Oscar stuff.
Don't recall.
All right. Ron's next one, Jurassic Park.
Of course.
Tale of survival against a different species caused by science gone awry. Also, large franchise movies.
We also have a Malcolm.
Oh, good point. Yes. Malcolm. Dr. Malcolm.
Yep.
This time he's a doctor. Computer title connection.
Yeah, right.
And his last one, this is one has an ape in it, has Andy Serkis motion captured. Part of a reimagining of a franchise. This is the 2000.
That's on mine.
Yep.
Yeah, that's
all. I think everybody wrote down the 2005 King Kong, I'm sure.
I feel like there was like a crew connection. There was like another connection to King Kong as well.
There's a couple, yeah.
All right. Travis has, he will suggest that Quentin Tarantino written From Dusk Till Dawn. Title connection? Oh, yeah, Dawn. And humans with guns interacting with another species.
Yep. I like From Dusk Till Dawn.
Oh, man, that was a video store classic for my brother.
Absolutely.
Jim has the 1968 Planet of the Apes. Why not go back to the start? The movie share a percussionist as well as being based on the same books.
That's very funny. A percussionist.
Percussionist, very nice. Didn't we have a percussionist in, was it a quiz show that we had the percussionist that we cut to?
Yeah.
And then Jim has a, how about Jason Clarke playing second fiddle to a science fiction creature in the second film of a reboot of a series in Terminator Genesis?
Yep,
that besides was Clark movie show, 269 other cast and crew. Genesis was the second movie in the reboot series? I don't even remember.
Yeah, it was the
Salvation, then Genesis.
Yeah.
Salvation was the
Christian Bale one, right?
Right, that was the big war one. Was there one before Genesis? Now I have to look. That talk about a franchise that's off the rails.
No, Dark Fate's the most recent one. Man.
Yeah.
There was Rise of the Genesis in 2015, Dark Fate in 2019. I think he is thinking of Salvation, I guess, which was 2009.
Yeah.
There also was Rise of the Machines, but that was Terminator 3, which is another one that, like, that. The end of Dawn kind of reminds me of the end of Rise of the Machines, where it's like a very dark, like, well, humanity's fucked ending.
I didn't hate the end of Rise of the Machines. There's a lot of things not to like about Rise of the Machines. Ultimately, I think the real lesson from any of these is that they should have stopped making Terminator movies after that second one, because you can't.
Quit while your head.
Done.
Yeah, let's just stop. Yeah.
Well, there's nowhere to go. That's the problem. Yeah. There's nowhere to go in these movies. Like, Cameron did it. Like, that's the end. The story is a two-parter. It's over. There's not much to tell. The only thing you can actually tell is what happened in Rise of the Machines, and that's it. Right. Like, anything subsequent is just not going to work, and that's where
I do feel like they tried with Salvation where they're like, let's show the war, but it was just really not interesting. Unlike the Planet of the Apes war. All right, Alex O has Man and Ape Coexist, but also come into conflict, Tarzan from 1999. And you haven't had an animated movie yet this year, so you got to meet your quota.
True.
I've never seen Tarzan. That's one of my Disney blind spots.
Yeah.
Another ape movie, played by Andy Serkis, with a human role for him too this time, King Kong. Yep. 2005. And what I assume is a pretty similar story, but in a fantasy setting, also with Toby Kebbo. That is Warcraft.
Yep. The World of Warcraft movie. Yep.
Yeah.
Robbie has the Batman, Matt Reeves directed, King Kong. Yep. I mean, King Kong coming up a lot. Andy Serkis, yeah, Ape Monkey. And then my brother Aaron.
That's the one.
Yeah. My brother Aaron has Chicken Run Dawn of the Nugget. Dawn. Also treatment of animals. That episode can be sponsored by Impossible Chicken Nuggets.
Indeed. Want.
Yeah. And then Fantastic Planet, which is a movie I've seen the cover for. I know nothing really about it.
I just watched that recently on Criterion for one of the Criterion challenges. Yeah.
All right.
It is a good connection.
Kevin, you're still our guest. You get to go first.
Okay, cool. So obviously people said King Kong, so that one's hit. So there's a couple things we could go with. From the Matt Reeves end, I believe you guys have seen Cloverfield. Right?
Yes, we have not done it. We have seen it.
Okay. Well, Cloverfield is a possibility. I'll throw it on there, Cloverfield. Okay. But the other one I actually was going to suggest, because I thought you guys have maybe covered Cloverfield, is Let Me In, which you said you had not seen. It's a really interesting one. I goddamn love the original movie, Let the Right One In. I think it's a masterpiece. I have a lot of feelings about Let Me In, but I would be curious to throw that your way to see how it shakes out. Very good cast, so it would be interesting to see you guys experience that. Cloverfield, as mentioned. Toby Kebbell, I could have gone with Fantastic Four and been a jerk, but I didn't. Instead, a more recent movie called Hurricane Heist. Fun one. Really wacky. Really, so, like, I want to throw that your way. The other one involving Andy Serkis is also an animated feature. I've never actually seen this movie, but I've heard really great things, and it's written by one of my favorite writers, actually, in television. Stephen Moffat. This is Adventures of Tintin. I heard it's quite good. And then my final one, of course, bringing it all full circle, baby. That Cody Smith McKee, Dark Phoenix. Good luck. Nice.
Dawn of the Phoenix.
Wonderful. Dawn of the Phoenix. I'm
trying to remember. Dark Phoenix was not the third one, though. That's the fourth one, right?
Correct.
Because Apocalypse was the third one. Yeah.
Technically, yeah.
Well, it's weird because First Class happened. But it's not directed by Singer again, who did do, well, I guess, the Apocalypse and Days of Future Past, but then the writer directed Dark Phoenix. It's super
Simon
weird.
Kinsberg, who also was the writer on, I believe, X2, but definitely on Last Stand.
Gotcha.
Yeah. Great. All right. Cool. What was the writer of Tintin? What did he do on TV? He said he's your favorite TV writer.
So, he's done several things. He did Sherlock. He did a show called Jekyll. He did Dracula. He did a comedy called Coupling that's British that I really love. He is also my favorite Doctor Who writer. He was a showrunner throughout the 11th Doctor's tenure, along with Peter Capaldi's tenure. Absolutely brilliant. Absolutely love him. Highly recommend pretty much almost everything I just said.
Nothing. I haven't seen anything that he's done, but sounds intriguing. All right. Brennan.
I mean, I would be remiss if I didn't bring up the second movie in a trilogy that stars Andy Serkis in a mocap suit. We just learned of the passing last night of Bernard Hill, who played King Theoden in Lord of the Rings, The Two Towers. We also have a climactic fight in Tower in this one. So there you go. Yep. Let's see. There were few things that I wrote down. What do I want to go with? I would be remiss if I didn't do another zombie movie, since I brought up zombies earlier. Dawn of the Dead, we get that Dawn connection.
Which one, though?
The remake, the Zack Snyder.
Zack Snyder's one good movie, possibly.
I actually really like that movie, so there you go.
I actually really like Dawn of the Dead.
How about humans pointing guns at apes that they find in a lost civilization? This one based on a Michael Crichton novel, Congo.
Congo.
I think that movie might be impossible to find streaming, but I do think Congo is pretty fun.
How about I always butcher this word. Anamorphized animals that can walk and talk and speak, and they're all a part of a team. Let's go with Guardians of the Galaxy. Came out in the same summer. I will also do another Dawn movie. This one, humans fighting against other humans, the remake of Red Dawn. I chose a couple of remakes because I thought it would be funny to do remakes of things, because this is technically a remake of an earlier franchise. So there you go.
This is the 2012 version of Red Dawn.
Yes.
I look up the year.
Yep.
All right.
The Hemsworth.
Yes. Yep. Nothing has been taken off of my list. I'm shocked. So I think it's five. Because I was a little bit more thinking about movies that were the third movie in a series.
Oh, okay.
So this one is the third movie in a series. It does have Andy Serkis in it, although I think I don't really remember him being in it, so it must be a pretty small role. In fact, this movie is pretty memory hold for me. While this is the third movie in a series, the title does begin with the word Rise, which was the first movie of this series, and that is The Rise of Skywalker. We also got Kerry Russell in that movie as well.
He's Snoke.
Yeah, he's credited as Snoke. That's why.
Right, but I don't remember Snoke is in Rise of Skywalker. Rise of Skywalker.
He's body is because they clone him.
Yeah, it would be like a flashback or something, but yeah.
The memory hold movie. Also, all the J.J. Abrams connections between Matt Reeves.
Also, you don't want to watch Rise of Skywalker.
No, I really, really don't. Take it off the list.
I was thinking if we did Rise of Skywalker, it would be fun. We had Kevin on this week. We get Rich back next week. And we just keep
actually pretty funny.
I don't
think
that Rich would even want to come back for that.
The next one, another third movie in a series. Something from this series already came up earlier. Michael Giacchino did the score. Humans interacting with an anamorphized, like sharing the earth with an anamorphized thing, which is a dinosaur. That is Jurassic World Dominion. That's last year.
Boy, you're picking some choices, my man.
Yeah, I know. just you wait, Kevin. We have the word Dawn in the title of this movie. We have the battle for leadership between two different philosophies, the revenge of lost loved ones. We just talked about Zack Snyder. That would be Batman versus Superman, Dawn of Justice, Batman v Superman. Andy Serkis is not in this one, but he does end up being Alfred in a different series.
He does.
All right. My last one that is the third movie in a series. This one has Gary Oldman. It shares a cinematographer with Dawn of the Planet of the Apes. That is Harry Potter and the Prisoner of Azkaban.
There you go.
How is that the best option of the ones you've listed?
I have one more. I will not do 65 as my fifth pick, which I was thinking about with the what's his name?
Yeah.
Now my last one is post-apocalyptic wasteland, humans trying to figure out how to live with it. We are getting this summer a follow-up to this movie.
There it is.
Yes, it's not a quiet place. I was thinking about a quiet place. That is Fury Road.
Yes. I got it as soon as you said the start to go through. I'm like, ooh, yeah, that's the one.
Yeah. I was thinking about a quiet place, but I had to pick all these terrible third movies first. I also had Contagion and Outbreak on my list, Book of Eli, Everest, 65. And then because we have Koba in this, I was thinking we could do Kubo in the Two Strings, but it doesn't
quite work.
All right,
let's take it from the top.
All right, here we go.
Gorillas in the Mist, Jurassic Park, King Kong 2005, From Dusk Till Dawn, Planet of the Apes from 1968, Terminator Genesis, Tarzan, King Kong 2005 again, Warcraft, The Batman, King Kong, Chicken Run, Dawn of the Nugget, Fantastic Planet, Cloverfield, Let Me In, Hurricane Heist, Adventures of Tintin, Dark Phoenix, Lord of the Rings and Two Towers, Dawn of the Dead, Congo, Guardians of the Galaxy, Red Dawn, Rise of Skywalker, Jurassic World Dominion, Batman vs. Superman, Dawn of Justice, Prisoner of Azkaban, and Mad Max, Fury Road. Zach, you get to go first.
I will just say we will not be getting the Letterboxd point this week. The Letterboxd point was Planet of the Apes from the 2001 version of Planet of the Apes.
Yes.
But that's only because the Letterboxd most suggested isn't going to be a movie that's in like the direct series.
Right, of course.
Yeah. I don't remember what X-Men's was because we didn't talk about it last week. It's probably X-Men Origins Wolverine.
That makes sense.
One of my few X-Men blind spots.
Right. Zach, why don't you go first?
I get to go first. God, it's hard to pick. I want to pick off my own list and I can't do that.
I know, right?
Do I pick King Kong? Because everybody suggests I'm going to go with Cloverfield. We talked about Cloverfield, post-apocalyptic, fighting a big monster, Matt Reeves. Yeah.
Yep. All right, great.
We end up getting other movies in the series of Cloverfield as well.
Let's see what we got. You know what? I would be down to revisit the Batman. We got Matt Reeves. We talked about, you know, we talked about him throughout this. I gave him my hero in the movie. I'm gonna pick the Batman.
Not Batman versus Superman. Just checking.
Nope. The Batman.
All right, Kevin. How about you?
I could pick one of the garbage movies, but like you're right, it is coming out soon. You're on a rewatch kick. I'm gonna go Fury Road because that movie is a 5 out of 5 for me.
All right. Nice. I think we would be what, like a week? That comes out Memorial Day weekend, so we'd be like 2 weeks before.
Yep, 3 weeks we'd be before. 2 weeks before, much like we were.
Yeah, we've done a good job with that this year. Yep. All right, Brennan, do you want to guess where Cloverfield is streaming?
Nowhere.
Nope, Paramount Plus.
Paramount Plus, nice.
Chris, 85 minutes for Cloverfield, very short.
Wow, that's short and sweet.
Yeah.
The Batman should be on Max, I hope.
Yep. Yep. Okay, good. It is not short and sweet, though. It is 100 minutes longer than Cloverfield.
Thank God. And the same with Mad Max.
Also, yeah.
Should be on Max, yeah.
It is, yep.
Max should be on Max.
Mm-hmm. Also long.
Yeah.
Very true. Nicholas Holt in Mad Max Fury Road played Beast in one of the X-Men movies.
That's true. Mm-hmm. There you go. Nice connection. Mm-hmm. Zach, here's the thing, and I'm going to catch strays for this. Mad Max Fury Road is a movie I'd like us to do because you and I have very different opinions about it. It's a movie that you are so much higher on than I am.
I'm not as high as I think people really love Mad Max Fury Road. I like it. I think it's really impressive what they do. I think it would be interesting also to go from CGI to much practical effects.
Yeah. I would like to revisit it. I've only seen it the one time. I think it's worth the revisit to see if my mind has changed. To see, you know, yeah, I think we should do Mad Max Fury Road. I think it'd be fun.
I think Mad Max Fury Road, we're also jumping one summer ahead, right? We went from summer of 2014 to summer 2015.
And we get our post-apocalypse on. So
yep. All right, cool. Mad Max Fury Road it is. Easy pick. No,
we're wrapping up right now.
I mean, listen, I'm all for this. I'm glad I chose it because that movie's great.
Oh, look at you, Kevin.
If my mom wasn't in town, I'd be on for the third one, I guess. But sadly.
Oh, wait, Fury Road was my choice. I was going to say you got another point. But
he picked it from your list, though.
You did pick it from my list. Yeah, you were complicit. Cool. All right, Mad Max Fury Road coming up next week. You can prepare yourself for Furiosa coming out in just a couple weeks. It is on Max.
Sorry, one of my other wives.
Yeah, there we go. Who's your other wife?
Anya Taylor-Joy.
I was trying to remember her name. I was like, the one who was in the movie I just saw recently. All right, cool.
And my husband, Chris Hemsworth. Really just a lot of my SOs in that movie.
All right. Kevin, what are you looking forward to watching this week, and what do you want to plug?
I mean, what I'm looking forward to watching is going to be, hilariously, X-Men 97, course, War of the Planet of the Apes.
Yep, there you go.
Oh, and you know what? I'm going to throw a TV one. I'm jazzed about tomorrow's Survivor because this season has been nuts. And
freaking wild. I saw you tweeting up a storm on Wednesday. I was like, I've never seen Kevin online for Survivor like this. Listen,
Gabon 2 Electric Boogaloo is doing great.
Oh, look at you. Oh, wow. Wow. That is quite the accusation.
It's just a bunch of chaotic dummies playing Survivor, and I love it.
So I saw Challengers last week. And I was just going to say, big week for Applebee's between Survivor and Challengers.
I'm going to see Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes on Saturday morning. Really looking forward to that. And yeah, as Kevin said, X-Men. And then I'm really looking forward to listening to Kevin's podcast on Screen and Page. Yeah. So there you go.
Always good. Is that your only, do you have any other podcasts to plug, Kevin?
So there's Screen and Page, which has our X-Men coverage, me and Rich, who were on last week, of course. And then there's also on Worldwind Podcast, I do Doctor Who, which the new season of Doctor Who also kicks off this weekend. So we're going to get new Doctor Who, which is going to be really fun. So we're covering that over there.
Nice. I saw a trailer for it, I think during basketball last night. And I was like, wow, this is like very upgraded from what I would expect from Doctor Who. All right, I'll just keep it simple. What I'm looking forward to watching is War for the Planet of the Apes. Either tonight or tomorrow, depending on how the night shakes out. Cool. And we'll see everybody next week. Kevin, thanks for coming back 2 weeks in a row.
Yeah, really appreciate it.
Man. really fun to like pick your brain about all of this stuff.
Listen, I'm glad to be one of the only second people to do this. I'm in good company with me and LT, so.
There you go. Sweet. Yeah, and we'll have you back on sometime soon, but, you know, we'll be catching you in our ears talking X-Men 97 and any other fun nerd stuff that you get into. So, and we'll see everybody next week for Mad Max Fury Road.
Good night, everybody.
Oh, what a day! What a lovely day!
Got a Maurice lover in the Letterboxd reviews. 21 Frames of Nick says, protect Maurice. I fucking love Maurice.
Fair.
I think I've seen like somebody on Twitter who posted like a picture of Maurice and was like, whenever this one's around, like, you know, he's one of the good ones or something like that. Like he's like the big wide like look of his face.
Oh, it's so beautiful. Yeah.
Yeah. I do like that all the apes are like different species of apes.
Right.
There aren't too many
different looks. They're all
they all have different. Yeah. They look distinct.
Yeah.
And then Cinephilia said, do you think if Caesar was real, he would want to be my friend? I hope so.
No, probably not.
Somebody else
wants to be left alone. Leave Caesar alone.
Yeah. Fuck Koba. That's what somebody else said. So, you know, people have their opinions. I would die for Maurice and Caesar. Matt Reeves is going to kill it, somebody said. Must be right
Batman,
before that.
Yeah, before Batman.
Yeah.
All right. Nice. All right, cool. Well, thanks again, Kevin.
Yeah, thanks, Kevin.
Thanks for having me. This was great.
Yeah.
Great.